I'd like to read this poem for missing. For a missing friend and poet, Lee Mo'Murtagh, who passed away last weekend. The poem is just the only one I happen to have with me. I wasn't thinking of him when I chose it. I'll read it in Irish, and I was listening to some people who write in English now as their second language. And I have to admire them because I understand the challenge of it, having taken on Irish as my writing language initially. And so this is, I have translated it to English and I've started writing in English lately, but for just over 10 years I've been writing in Irish now. And it's still a challenge. Lauren Leach. Crown. Ní ósan scéard gan dúr, ba bhísnúil é mo fósa le cloch, níor féach éon féach hóndín gan varig, hór le bós is éigmis rib ír gás. Ní fuirist é airi in ní titim, níor hór le docht ná tégarhe gan stró, is marm laum is skewerhe mo vrien le huil le ganyev cloch is sheen. Ach ke a chwinig is a chap in a chiaun chos poir sail chut na vwil in an its door na bor. Barlam gach so a glacha slán o hon an vugi mo chrebre na frienta ag a bagos. Warrior Tree speaks. This bleak place thwarts my survival. Getting hitched with stone took guts. My rise was not without its travail, where death and loss preceded vigor. Awkwardness has followed failure. My doggedness exacts such rare growth. Toiling in sand, rock, weather, styles me stark and shorn. But who has contrived as requisite to living a spin into overabundance that disparages the autumnal store? I prefer to steal what ease I may away from the snares of excess, my outward spread unstymied by complacency.
Thank you, Kathy. And next we have Julie Aldridge.
This is my most recent poem, and apologies if I have read it before, but my memory is not as good as I thought it was. It's called Unreasonable Season. I will remember the greening of the spring this year, an impossible assertion of absinthe green. Every leafy scene soaked with each violent shower, grasses flattened in the ditches with mermaid hair overflowing. Deathless green fields, bog grass intruding on sod, clumped like shades of the living, sheep chilled and bleating, rain and mist fraying the ridge of Marlin Mountain, and the sound of a crow with a rattle.
Thank you, Julie. And next, I think we have Brendan Mulcahy.
Me, Jesus. Brendan, would you be Jesus today? Sister Maria had sheltered me since the Inis Fallon crossing and the boat train translated me to my North London primary. Now she'd thrown me to the dogs. I'd had my hand up to be picked, secure in the knowledge that I wouldn't be. We had sung in class back at St. Patrick's in Cork, but classroom drama was a thing unknown. I couldn't move or speak or think. Encouraging cries of, go on, you can do it, fell on deaf ears. I froze. No attempt was made to unfreeze me. Stefan, would you, and in seconds, quam-free, streamlined Stefan was up on the desk, dispensing loaves and fishes to a grateful multitude. Lurking behind the blackboard some weeks on, my motivation found, in a non-speaking role, I helped to mug the Good Samaritan.
Thank you, Brendan. And could we just have a reversal here? Maybe Mary O'Connell can read first, because I think we were sitting there. Thanks, Sue. This is called Family Configuration. The light of home was mellow amber, in contrast to the dazzle of cold sheets newly spread on dormitory beds that somehow always smelt of toothpaste. Lonesome when her parents said goodbye, slab toffee, a paltry substitute. Hardest when their eyes would start to fill with unshed tears as they turned away. Unspoken words of love became an arm to shield her from unexpected squalls. It was their sacrifice and ceaseless care that fed the roots of her serenity. Those cradled by secure attachment seemed to withstand those slings and arrows released by life to put us to the test. Random encounters also play a part. Those of us who stumble in the shadow of forebears and family who offer a meaningless legacy of pain may take a lifetime to recover. Whether trauma or triumph be our lot, it stems from who is there for us and why, as LGBTQ and IVF bring to kith and kin a richer weave. Gender fluid options shape tradition. It may not be our bloodline, mum and dad, who bring us up. As well as DNA, a new diversity comes into play. Woo! Thank you, Mary. And now we'll have Josephine. Seamus, you want to do it?
Yeah, we'll
reverse them, just make it easier. Seamus
Harrington.
Thanks, sir. Nobody wants to go after Joe.
Some people probably recognize this situation, and it might be too difficult to speak about or even to write about. It's called the waiting room. I pace up and down, ignore the vacant seats. The window pulls me back to view the entrailing pipes and blips that raster on and on. Toting a clipboard, a white coat hurries by. Hard drives must be ready and ripe to flake out another blizzard of paper. Mr. Tim Ford, a neutral voice at the doorway. That's me, an old gent, drops his tabloid list to brace from his seat. There is a problem, the anteroom door swings to and they're out of earshot. My thumping ribcage knows I must be next. Here, onto this bench, ease the window catch. A feathery snowfall drooling on metallic roofs, not an SUV in sight, a wailing ambulance, a commando spider drops down his bungee line. Someone is calling my name. I step out. She is 10 years old, for God's sake. Damn this NCT.
Thank you, Shane. Next we have Benjamin Burns.
I couldn't find the poem I wanted to read on my phone, so well, I've read this one once before, I think, but I'll give it another go. When you are three and attend a busy preschool and have very little time to yourself, it can become necessary on a cold day in January to sit huddled between the trunks of two small trees in the dim light, scarf wrapped high around your neck, staring meditatively at the soft ground littered with pine needles while your peers bustle noisily about, gathering oneself before intention strikes.
Next, Patricia Walsh.
Thanks, Susan. This is called These Hardened Hours. Expending, depending, coinciding with death, fulfilled prophecies dangle past the shore, shattering romances under the boss's nose, goring with intent at highbrow station. The genealogy of a song inspires the dead carpet. Burning the incriminating, a mother's pursuit. Daily deadlines undertaken in a chamber's delight. This dirty brain makes fools of us all. Absolute revenge replaced by fat. Eventually to disuse, celebrating collapse. Shattered by sage, a story worth reciting. Once read, never forgotten as a film star is. Variegated secret through the media unrelenting, creating ancestors through the dross of learning. A philosophy to view a joke is long over. Some memoirs are worth taming over tea and biscuits. Environmental details entwined in love. Riches in the tamest dreams root far and wide. Theoretical conspiracies skulk in the corner. Too drunk to care in any given direction. Post-action perdition, cursing the kiss that makes us wanted, a badge of achievement. Living past what sidles through the coffee break. Fearing the future in a single phone call. Cross-channel television's golden curse. Thanks.
Thanks, Trish. And next we have Aliza.
So this comes from the beautiful sunny days we had this week. Quantity is the quality of abundance, I say to myself as I step carefully around the shadows cast by the trees, dreaming of sinking my feet in the sopping soil of the forest, of sinking my fingers in stinking, overripe roots, feeling absurd, sun-soaked, light-stroked. Not enough, not enough, not enough. As I move, I attempt to spread out my skin as to let every single drop of sun sink in, touch the walls and fall in the infinite, infinitely dry wells beneath. Light-soaked, sun-stroked, not enough, not enough, not enough. As life piled on life, piled on life, piled on life could never suffice. As I move, I remember the fields in the summer storms of many years, extending as if they were breathing, dissipating their particles in every direction, chanting, let it rain, let it rain, let it rain. Large entities concentrated in unison expansion for maximum reception, every leaf of grass in surrender, moving outwards as death does, let it rain. Quantity is the quality of vastness, I say to myself as again I step carefully around the shadows cast by the trees, dreaming of many things among which, flying on a field during the storm, my belly tickled by the grass, feeling full to the full to the full, an impossible wish, the yearning which moves every day, feeling absurd, a strange overgrowth of green around my temples, weeds sprouting from my backbones and invading the space under my fingernails, opening wells rising to the surface, sun soaked.
Thank you, Lisa. And let's welcome this to them.
Thanks, that was beautiful. I love this song even more. So I was reading about, I don't want to kill his name, Mercedes Varo.
Okay.
She was a Spanish surrealist, a beautiful artist. She studied a lot into alchemy, a very warm illustrations, and I focused this poem about one of our pieces of art called The Call, but I really wanted to cover all of them because they all cover a very similar theme of alchemy and a bit of science, a lot of surrealism, like a lot of the figures, they have feminine qualities, but they're not very defining. You know, like there's one where there's a person robed in moth clothes. If anyone can see, this is the piece I based of this poem on. It's called The Call. And once you see her pieces, you never forget them. They stand out really well. Usually surrealist paintings are very dark. Varro's pieces are very bright and warm. So this is called The Call. A dream sprite of citruses wanders within her mental crypt, robed in warmth of buttercup petals, inflamed and burning her dreamscape. The egos watch, embossed in wood-grain walls, their eyes closed blind, so they spy through the scents of our mangoes and cinder smoke. They're aroused by the sprite that lights their darkened home. How surreal is this? How peculiar and such an oddity. Logically, you simplify the scenario, but it awakens her, traumatized by the unsure cipher tale. In her thick bed of moth winds, she still feels the tools of a motor and a porcelain teacup that burnt her palms red. Cease your deciphering of an alchemist's reflection immersed in her labyrinths. Let her hypnotically lie asleep in the depths not even shadows can wander into. Thank you.
Thank you for that. We have 5 people to go and very short staff, so keep it short. Thank you. Okay, next we have Cedric.
A new young titan. I break fast, often, but won't pledge any oath that gilds me. I see nothing sublime, no possible contemplation in occasional starvation. I consume around the clock resources and time, entire nations, every revolution. With the nightly darkness broken, crunch between my teeth the oat, gorge on the porridge, while people chant at prime times in mass hysteria over my promises of riches beyond the poor's reach. I consume all alike, people as livestock and hopes for evolution. I am a philosophy ever hungry. An entire world cannot feed me.
Thank you, Cedric. And next we have Max Creedon.
My mom was fast, so I want to do it. Okay. I had a fast poem, actually, we'll chug it off to the beginning for the first time this evening, the drone came in overhead. So just arrived and put it over. But I'm going to do the quick song you just wrote tonight, because I always like doing improv work, you know. That's why I'm writing it during the evening. And this is my song, combined with Shadows, there, Phillips Link, with also with Liz Link. It's
good to see you. Glad you came home. Great to talk to you and spend some time alone. How you've grown, wise and strong. It's great to hear you there, having the banter, the sound of laughter, all day the guitars, and you shine there from the shadows. Soon you'll have to go toward what good is life without the shadows. This I know. Saudade, the darkness defines what makes your soul glad. What is hidden highlights the light. You shine best in the night. Saudade, saudade song. Soon you must be gone. I'll get along, the dark days won't be too long. As the summer sun will always sing for a strong Saudade. Saudade song, shining brightest in the night. And there's a place for the brightness in the dark. I didn't finish the last line, I only wrote it there, no, sorry. Thanks, as always. And next we have Alana Matthews, I think.
Hi. So this isn't my poem because I'm not Allen Ginsberg, Jack Kerouac, or Neil Cassidy, but I just discovered it today and it's called Pull My Daisy, and I thought it was really beautiful, so I'll read it now really quickly. Pull my daisy, tip my cup, all my doors are open, cut my thoughts for coconuts, all my eggs are broken. Jack my Arden, gate my shades, woe my road is spoken. Silk my garden, rose my days, now my prayers awaken. Bone my shadow, dove my dream, start my halo bleeding. Milk my mind and make me cream, drink me when you're ready. Hop my heart on, hark my height, seraphs hold me steady. Hip my angel, hype my light, lay it on the needy. Heal the raindrop, sow the eye, bust my dust again. Woe the worm, work the wise, dig my spade the same, stop the hopes, what's the hex, where's the wake, how's the hicks, take my golden beam, rob my locker, lick my rocks, leak my cock in school, rack my lax, lark my looks, jump right up my hole, whore my door, beat my boar, eat my snake of fool, craze my hair, bear my poor asshole shorn of wool, say my oops, ope my shell, bite my naked nut. Roll my bones, ring my bell, call my worm to sup. Poke my parts, pop my pot, raise my daisy up. Poke my cap, pit my plum, let my gap be shut. Thank you.
And next, make way for Kieran. Do you want to sit?
No.
You'll stand.
Okay. Right. That's the echo answer.
Oh, yeah.
Might as well. There's a bench here, might as well sit.
Yeah.
It's called The Happen and Happening. Alone with thoughts and thoughts again. To cry for and to carry, to smile at and to marry, to new thoughts returning, and dry now from the rain again, steaming from saturation, to touch drive once more, and for a second touch. And if it rained and rained all day, and all it did all day was rain and rain, what would it sound like? Would it have the pitter-patter, splash and ripple? Or would it have the slow vowels and easy consonants of my voice? And what would you know of the difference between saturation and a visceral report? From a mind in active retort to moments spent unconscious beneath a plastic sheath made conscious. What do you know of honest responses unconcerned with your beliefs? What is the drying dry to the seeing eye enclosed by wet skin steaming? Parts of your past evaporating to join the air of now. Forgotten by your touch-dry body, but clung to by your mind, learning of umbrellas and slick-mac raincoats and growing in fear of the mood swings of the sky. What lengths are gone to honor your past experience? What is the shape and structure of the threads of thought that connect the happened to the happening? How long grows a silken strand to span an aging landscape before breaking at its own weight and soon forgotten? What value have pillars placed to support that which has gone, the fading, rescued by intention born in love? How bright the lights of the search and rescue mission for your disappearing self, when the touch dry and breathing is starved of your attention, navigating a landscape undetailed, searching for the strength to get wet again. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. And now for the final reading of the evening, Conor McManus.
Yeah. Thanks, Sue. This is called London Was Booming. This is for Sue. London had its own smells and sounds, and I can still hear the screech of brakes, smell the burning asbestos, and feel the whoosh of warm air as the trains came into the underground stations. My first job was under the arches of Charing Cross Bridge at Embankment Place 1. I made my way in on the district line for 7 o'clock every morning. I superglued pennies and five pennies together to get the train ticket and the change of a pound from the machine. At Embankment, I was on for Lang, and those were long, dreary days. 12-hour shifts, 7 days a week. It was dark clocking in and dark knocking off. The bums had been cleared out from under the arches and were sleeping in cardboard boxes on the footpaths under Embankment Bridge, and Green Murphy was digging down to the bedrock. Under the arches, you could get any sort of job. Locking the gate, opening the gate, sweeping the footpath, putting up signage, directing traffic, wiring spots, unblocking sewers. Condoms and assorted accoutrements from the Heaven Club were always blocking sewers that ran to the rear of the site, and it was my job to clean them. Beneath the brick falls, it was always dark and full of blue diesel smoke. There was the constant tuk-tuk of dumpers and the incessant hiss of compressed air that leaked from yellow hoses that snaked their way through the mud and around the site. In the light and the half-light and the blue halos of light, through the dust and the diesel fumes, a rampiler sounded a dead thunk as it battered home steel tubing to the bedrock. Taffies, looking like Jaffa cakes in mud-smothered orange boiler suits and rigger's boots, hard hats and earmuffs watched on, up to their ankles in mud, with muddied hands and muddied faces. In rare moments, the uneasy grunting of pigeons could be heard from the corbels in the darkness overhead. The main shafts went down over 100 feet, and globes of yellow light lit up the shaft heads. From the shaft head, you could see the men below, their bare backs glistening with sweat, even in January. They were digging down through the floodplain gravel of the Thames, down through the gout clay of the London Basin, down to the basement beds in search of solid footing to hold up the block of offices that would tower over Charing Cross Station. These were Murphy's men, big men who walked with stoops and beltless combats and rigger's boots, always on the jackhammer or shoveling flakes of stiff blue dog from the old riverbed of the Thames into buckets that were winched up and carted away in dumpers and left at the mouth of the arch to be loaded into twin-wheel tippers as the pigeons cooed and died from diesel fumes.
The mud dug out by the spadeful was carted away by the lorry load, and when the muck wagons reversed in under the arches, they blocked out the light and pumped in more diesel fumes. Outbound, they brought with them on their wheels mud that stuck to the street and got everywhere. We were mud from head to toe too, all the time. Tube shifts, working round the clock, 7 days a week. The money was good. London was booming. Out on the muddied street, the short street that is Embankment Place, the street that connects Embankment Underground with Charing Cross Station, thousands of people rush to and fro, charging to work every day. We mocked and scoffed at them and their briefcases, carrying only the sun and a sandwich. And in the evening, with heads in the air, they ploughed through fresh concrete in tanned leather shoes on their way home to Middlesex or Essex or Sussex or one of those soulless burbs, a black hole with the name at the end of a train line somewhere, where there might be trees or there might not be trees, anathema to Paddy, who would end up out there too, somewhere, married to his English wife, raising English kids with English accents, in homes too dear to afford, and when the shit hits the fan on Maggie's farm, has to head to Germany to keep the roof over their heads, at 50. On Saturday evenings, I soaked in the baths, trying to get rid of the smell of shuttering oil and diesel fumes and mud, and the thoughts of lice-ridden pigeons and mottle-headed pigeons of questionable breeding, their heads tucked in tight to their breasts and their breasts rising and falling as they huddled side by side, but only half slept. It was only a matter of time before they'd have to leave the corbels. The winos had already been shifted, and it was to be their turn next. London was booming. When I had enough of the mud and the long shifts, I started on the tools with Duffy and Carr. I queued outside their place in Shepherd's Bush at 6 o'clock one morning and was picked from the queue and put on the first van out. That was a Monday, and I was put striking stoppings under a ganger who wore a copper wristband to stave off the pain of arthritis, the result of too many wettings. I jacked on Tuesday after breakfast. We'd had words and I threw a few fucks into him and walked across the road and got the start with O'Rourke's. I later regretted jacking Duffy and Carr because some of the men were working on both jobs simultaneously, bopping back and forth throughout the day. The jobs were so big you could do that and nobody noticed, and at the end of the week they collected two paychecks. On Thursday nights I queued to cash checks with sheep rustlers, hern stranglers and jackeens, with bomb makers, Akin steel fixers and Connemara men who talked to nobody but their own. Men from O'Rourke's, McGinley, Murphy and McNichols, all there in varying degrees of dirt and dishevelment on their way home from Liverpool Street, Canary Wharf, the Isle of Dogs. London was booming. We queued out the door of McGovern's and up the Kilburn High Road, past brightly lit for Michael Line drinking dins. Dins where late at night you had to buy a sandwich but didn't have to eat it to get more drink. Dins were stagey old-timers in white shirts and black suits, with nicotine-stained fingers and slicked white, smoke-tinged hair, yellower than the head-and-bottle porter, drank their subvention. These old-timers knew what it meant to drive the pick to the eye every time, and knew what it meant to dig down deep and so far back, and knew what it meant to get wet through and not get rained off and go home wet to some single room in Cricklewood or Camden, where they'd have to queue for the bath or go dirty to bed. We swore we wouldn't end up like them, and were told we were more educated, and by association more civilised and more sophisticated, and we'd all go home when the thing picked up. After Gibraltar we were murderous dogs, but Houghton's goal made it all okay again. I was in for the Sunday shift at Embankment and came up out of the station to see the Irish team splashed across the front pages, and my heart jumped in my body right there in the middle of London. We were the in crowd, it was cool to be Irish. We were doing good, we were told. We were on the big bobs and making more money than the Brits going to work with their sandwiches and their briefcases. But we had a higher chance of getting BD, STDs and CJD from Maggie's Burgers. Burgers made from cattle that were fed the crushed bones of other cattle. London was booming. Sometime in the summer of 88, I teamed up with Frank Sutton. Frank had the letters F-R-A-N-K tattooed on the inside of his lower lip. Hooking the lip with two fingers, he'd roll it out over his thumb to show you. For the next 2 years or so, we followed the work together. We worked with Gallagher, digging out cross connections and building concrete bulkheads beneath the Bank of England. We worked with Howland, building concrete stairs down to the underground at Mint Street. We worked on Ealing Hospital, where everybody drank in the nurses' club for 2 hours every day after lunch because the drink was cheap. We boxed in pipes on the central heat and retrofit in Council Flats on Old Street. The foreman was booking in hours and collecting the wages for five dead men. The snagging foreman was stealing the skill saws and selling them down the strippers club at lunch. We clocked in Sundays at Double Bubble but didn't do a rap. And when the Seoul Olympics were on, we watched the televisions and slept on the couches when the tenants were out. Frank's modus operandi on entering each new flat was to rifle the bedside lockers. He always left everything back as was, but trawled up rubbers, dildos and corn mags, which he'd have to have a fit to before doing the tap. We pretended to work night shifts under Trafalgar Square while riots raged overhead and mounted police truncheon citizens. We were well below ground, oblivious to it all. Maggie wanted to tax us all per skull for living while killing us quietly with her burgers. In the queue up Kilburn High Road, there was incessant chatter about big hours and bigger money. We were always looking to hit the mother load, that place from where the money would just keep coming. That was our holy grail. Later, with the cash in our pockets, we talked of strongbacks and whalers and bites and balks of timber and stanchions and big ports while horsing back the pints. We were planning ways to make easier money, but fuck them all if they thought we'd get wet doing it. On Monday mornings, we crowded out small caps and greasy spoons and hard hats and busy vests and mucky toe caps. We lived on fry-ups and bubble and squeak and drank tea made from Thames water that had passed through every single last man jack one of us that lived in that great city 5 times. But on Monday mornings, all we wanted was out. Every single last one of us. Every last man jack one of us wanted to dig his way to France and work on Euro Disney. London was booming. Thank you.
Thank you, Connor, and thank you to everybody who went here tonight. Especially thank you to our guest poet, Liz Quirk. Give her one big round of applause.